Blog Talk Radio.
It's time for Voice of Indie. Your hosts today are Beam Weeks, author, producer, and marketing monster for independent multimedia publisher Fresh Ink Group, and Stephen Gies, author, producer, composer, and publisher for Fresh Ink Group.
And good evening, everybody. Happy Wednesday. Although while we're doing this show, it's not exactly that time. But welcome to the Voice of Indie podcast, episode number 92. I am your host, Beam Weeks, and with me, as usual, is my co-host, Mr. Stephen Gies. How are you doing tonight, Stephen?
I'm doing great. It's a beautiful sunny morning out here on this Wednesday evening in Alabama. I want to give a quick shout-out, get well wishes to our author member, Dr. Helen Burrell. She's still dealing with some health issues this week, and we wish her our best. And also Kenneth Lindquist, our new author who's doing the driving books. We had to postpone him a couple of weeks ago. He had an accident. He's had a couple of surgeries now, and now he's going to be in rehab for the next 3 weeks. Everything is going well. He's recovering well, and we're looking forward to rescheduling him, getting him back on the show, getting his books out in the near future, too. So our best to Kenneth Lindquist as well. Other than that, yeah. I'm watching the birds flying around out here. Everybody's got babies. The bluebirds have babies. The Canada geese are swimming out here with little babies behind them. We've got like 24 wood ducks nested in the boxes, and they've got little babies that are smaller than your fist swimming around. It's just kind of a fun time of year looking at all the birds.
Well, that's that time of year. Spring is in the air. Now, obviously, if Stephen's talking about good morning, that means this episode is actually not live. It's a brand new episode, so don't tune out. It's a brand new episode, but it's not live because our guest tonight, or this morning as we're recording it, is calling in from Ireland. So we aren't taking calls, but you can still respond on Twitter by using the hashtag Fresh Ink Group, because we will, while this show is playing, we will still be monitoring Twitter. So if you have a comment or something, we'll be there to take your comments and answer back to you in real time. So keep that in mind. But if you aren't familiar with this show, past episodes, or you are familiar with this show and you just want to know what's going on in the world of Fresh Ink Group and indie publishing, we have a newsletter, and this is how you can subscribe to it.
Stay on top of these podcasts and all things Fresh Ink Group with our weekly digital newsletter, new releases, videos, stories, excerpts, interviews, and more. Sign up now on the homepage of freshinkgroup.com and be the one who knows what's what.
What?
We've got a couple of new books out that have come out in the past month or so. The Oort Federation, To the Stars, The Second Oort Chronicle by science fiction master Robert G. Williscroft is out there for sale in all of the different formats, ebooks, hardcovers, soft covers, and pretty soon an audiobook. We're down to the last final chapters on getting that thing out. We've got a trailer for it, which is over on YouTube. Get over to the Fresh Ink Group channel and check out the Oort Federation trailer. Make sure you like it. And if you haven't subscribed to our channel, subscribe while you're there. And while you're at it, go ahead and check out the prequel to the Oort Federation, which is Icicle, A Tensor Matrix, The First Oort Chronicle. There's also a trailer for that over on YouTube. Check those out.
Yeah, get over there and check them out. And don't forget to hit the like button and subscribe if you're not subscribed already. Eerie Charms of the Short Story by Patricia A. Guthrie is out now. This is a fantastic collection of short stories. I know that because I edited it and I also read it. And it's she's a tremendous storyteller. So get out there and grab a copy. And that too has a book trailer on the Fresh Ink Group YouTube channel. So get over there again and hit that like and subscribe button while you're over there. Now, an episode of this show, and we're at number 92 right now. Closing in on that magic number 100. If you've missed any of these episodes and you want to go back and just re-listen to one again, here's how you can do that.
If you miss a show, find us in the archive in the Fresh Ink Group channel on YouTube, on Spotify, or under the podcast tab at freshinkgroup.com, beamweeks.com, and stephengies.com. On YouTube, be sure to like and subscribe.
All right. We got another book out, How to Start and Run a Food Truck Business in Florida. That is actually the first book of what's going to be a nationwide series of how to start and run a food truck business. It's going to be called Your Own Food Truck How To. And there's going to be a website, yourownfoodtruckhowto.com, which we're building right now. So if you're thinking of getting into the food truck business, this Florida book's got a lot of good information in it for you. Or check back with us and find out when the one for your state's coming out as well. But those are by Andrea Wingler, A.K. Wingler, and it's a great little series. Go over to YouTube to the Fresh Ink Group channel, and surprise, surprise, there's a trailer for it over there. We had a lot of fun making this one. We actually animated a food truck and customized it and you know, basically had some, ooh, look what we can do fun. So how to start and run a food truck business in Florida. Now, Beam, I took a quick look at our print bestsellers for the past week or so. What do you think's in the one number one slot?
Let me see. I'm going to cheat here.
No,
I don't have it.
No,
I
didn't put it on the sheet.
I'm going to say the food truck.
Nope. Erie Charms.
Again.
Yeah. Erie Charms of the Short Story by Patricia A. Guthrie. It's in the number one and number two slots. And the hardcovers actually inched up above the softcovers. We're selling more hardcovers of a fiction anthology than softcovers. And I have never seen that happen before. So congratulations,
wow.
Patricia Guthrie. You're rocking and rolling.
Congratulations, Pat.
Now,
all right.
The other three, can you imagine? There's one that's about a place in southeast Tennessee called Hello
Chattanooga. Hello Chattanooga.
Yeah. We're also rocking... Operation Ivy Bells, a Mac McDowell mission, which is the first in the Cold War submarine thriller series by Robert G. Williscroft, who's also a science fiction master. He wears multiple writers. So we're having a lot of fun with print sales, and congratulations to everybody.
All right. Now, as Stephen mentioned, the How to Start and Run a Food Truck has a trailer over on the YouTube channel. Here's a little something on how you can get over to that YouTube channel and discover all the magic that we do on book trailers.
Check out scores of Fresh Ink Group book trailers in the Fresh Ink Group channel on YouTube. Be sure to like, subscribe, share, and spread the word.
All right, now on to our guest. We are excited to have this guest on, too. This is why we're doing a pre-recording. As I stated, our guest is calling in from Ireland. Sally Cronin is the author of 15 books, including her memoir, Size Matters, Especially When You Weigh 330 Pounds, which was first published in 2001. This has been followed by another 14 books, both fiction and nonfiction, including multi-genre collections of short stories and poetry. Her latest release, Life is Like a Mosaic, Random Fragments in Harmony, is a collection of 50-plus images and poems on life, nature, love, and a touch of humor. As an author, she understands how important it is to have support in marketing books and offers a number of free promotion opportunities in the cafe and bookstore on her blog and across her social media. Her podcast shares book reviews and short stories on SoundCloud, Sally Cronin. After leading a nomadic existence, exploring the world, she now lives with her husband on the coast of Southern Ireland, enjoying the seasonal fluctuations in temperatures of the rain. And with that, welcome to the show, Sally Cronin. We are pleased to have you here.
Thanks.
Hi, Sally.
Very much, Stephen and Beam. Hi, Stephen. It's very kind of you to invite me on and to make a special timing so that I don't have to talk to you at 1 o'clock in the morning.
Yes, when we figured that out, we thought, all right, we'll cut you some slack. Now,
I appreciate it.
Now, your bio says you've lived a nomadic existence, and as we talked a little off the air, we got a feel of some of the places you lived. So where are you originally from, and where have you lived during your travels in this journey?
Well, my mother was half Irish but was born in the UK, and my father was born in the northeast of England. And I was born actually in England, but at 18 months, we went to live in Sri Lanka, or Ceylon, as it was then, until I was 3 and a half. My father was in the Royal Navy, so that started my travels, because 2 years later we went to Malta for 2 years, and 2 years after that we went to South Africa, where I went to school until I was 11, and then we returned to the UK. And I thought my traveling days were probably over, except for holidays, but then I met and married a guy who had also done some traveling. He was in Iraq working, and he was also with BP Tankers for several years. So he traveled around the world with that. And we spent time in England, time in Ireland, and then we had 2 years in Texas, in Houston, 2 years in Belgium, in Brussels. And then we spent the last 17 years till we came back here 6 years ago in Spain. We lived in Madrid and also in the south of Spain with my work, which was working on English-speaking radio. So we came back here 6 years ago. We're now 70s and decided that we thought when we retired, it would be a good idea to be somewhere where we didn't have to struggle in another language, although my husband's fluent and I'm fairly good. It's not the same when you're not well. And you think to yourself, well, you know, do you want to be moving house or moving countries when you're in your 80s? So we made the decision to come back here to Ireland, where he's from, and live here on the East Coast, I get them confused. Until I'm in my dotage. So, yes, so that's our travel log, if you like, and an amazing, amazing people, probably more than anything else, amazing people we've met.
I'll bet one of the biggest challenges was learning how to speak Texas.
Oh, you know, the first thing I got told, I talk quickly, you'll have to forgive me. And I walked into Macy's, we'd only been there a couple of days, and I, oh, shops, lovely. And I went into Macy's, and I asked a lady for some help with the clothes, and she said, ma'am, would you ever slow down? And that's usually what I go, Sally, would you slow down? But Texas is wonderful, fabulous.
Yeah.
And it was a time in the mid 80s of great music, and people sort of just jumping in the car and going off for long weekends. We drove across country to New Mexico to see Halley's Comet. You just never thought about it. You just didn't plan things. You say, oh, let's go to New Mexico this weekend. And it was just fabulous.
Beautiful country down there, yeah. Can you describe where you live now? I mean, you in a high rise? You in a little cottage on a creek? What's it look like around where you are?
Well, we came back from Madrid and just said, well, we better downsize. We'll get something small. But then we found an abandoned bread and breakfast with 7 bedrooms.
Ooh.
And
wow.
It was a
abandoned.
It was a bank repossession, and it was very inexpensive. And my husband loves a project, and it surely was. We had the garden was growing over the roof, trees were growing over the roof. Inside was warped floors. It hadn't been touched, it had been empty for 2 years or so, and it was terribly neglected, needed a lot of TLC. And it's been a labor of love, but we're now actually talking about putting it on the market and moving on now that it's been done. We love living here. We're about 5 minutes from the sea on the East Coast. Ooh. And there, whilst we haven't got a sandy beach, there's sandy beaches all down this side. Very near some, we're about 30 minutes from Wexford, which is a historic Viking town, and also Waterford, where my husband originally came from, which is also a Viking town. So there's a lot of history here, a lot of places to see. And if you don't mind a bit of rain, because Ireland is suspiciously green, you can actually, there's some amazing things to see here.
Wow, sounds beautiful.
Yeah, we're going through the rain here in Michigan. I mean, it's just, we got rain for all this week, and it's since middle of March, we just rain pretty much every day other than occasionally, you know, we'll get one day break. Now, having traveled all over this world, which I'm envious of your travels, I would love to. That's one thing I would love to do someday is just travel and see the world. And you actually
yes.
lived in some of these spots. Now, as a child growing up, were you a reader and a writer then, or come later to you? And has your travels influenced your writing?
I was very lucky to have two older sisters who were 10 or 11 years older than me when I was born. And they read me stories, and I automatically started reading. So I could read by the time I went to school at four. And I was very lucky then to have a kindergarten teacher who saw that I was love reading. So she gave me books that were perhaps slightly older than I would have had. So, yes, loved reading. And I wrote little poems and short stories from about 10 years old. I think one of the things about traveling as a child is, whilst it's exciting and an adventure, you're always the odd one out. So, for example, when I went to South Africa, age 10, 9 or 10, I went to a local school and I had to learn Afrikaans because it was a state school and that's what was on the curriculum. And at that time, in the 1960s, there were still people alive who remembered the Boer Wars, when, of course, the British fought the Boers. And in fact, being English didn't make it as easy as it might have been. Some of my friends at school, I was banned from going into their houses because
wow.
their grandparents oh. remembered the British and of course, the tragic events of the Boer Wars. So it was a time when I spent quite a bit of time on my own until I learned that if you adopt the local accent, you assimilate it much quicker. So, for example, I had a very South African accent when I was at school, and I sounded just like everybody else. And then when I went home, I had my English accent back. So that's, I think, children are adaptable. But there were times when books certainly were a very important escape outlet for me. And when we've traveled, there have been times with David's job when, for example, in America, I couldn't work because I didn't have that visa. He could work with his visa, but I couldn't. So I had to keep myself busy. So I wrote a journal, which was letters to my parents, for example, which I wrote every week for 2 years. And whilst I haven't published them as a book, they've gone out on my blog. So I tried wherever we went to keep myself busy writing in one form or another, but certainly we ended up with 7,000 books before we left Spain.
Ooh,
and we
nice.
Had to give several thousand away to an English language school because we just couldn't bring them back. But books have always played a huge part in our lives.
Now, as far as your writing goes, does the travels influence any of your stories?
They do. Some of them are set in places I've lived, but more importantly, I think it's the people I've met along the way who have featured in one way or another as a character. Because they are the people are the ones that stand out in my mind and
yeah.
such a rich cast across the board. And so, yes, they definitely make their way into my writing. But it is useful to have different locations to set stories in.
And of course,
living in Spain so long.
Yeah, I agree. People make the place.
Very much so. But Ireland is the latest place, obviously, and that's Tales from the Irish Garden, is fairy stories and follows on from a book that I started in Spain, which was Tales from the Garden. And we had statues in the garden that we inherited with the house, which we couldn't bring back here. So I wrote stories about every single one of them and put it in a book with a fairy kingdom under the magnolia tree. And when we came back here, I brought the fairy queen and her court with us. So,
cool.
So she lives under the magnolia tree in our garden now, and she resulted in the second book.
Such power a writer can wield, huh?
Absolutely. Yeah. And sometimes we forget that. we can make very positive changes, I think, in people's mm-hmm. perceptions, and it's a very strong advocacy for writing, for whether it's nonfiction or fiction. I think we sometimes underestimate ourselves and think of ourselves as entertainers, when in actual fact we can orchestrate change if we want to.
Hmm.
Indeed.
My head was spinning a little bit at all the globetrotting we were doing for a minute there. I wasn't clear. where exactly did you do college?
I went to college in England, and I trained as a secretary and a personal assistant, because in those days, which we're talking the mid to late 60s, that's what young ladies did. And my headmistress said to my mother that she didn't think I was university material, that I could possibly be a nurse, but more likely a secretary. So it was a fallback job, because the first thing I did when I left college was I trained as a dental nurse.
Huh.
So that was in England too. So that's where I was educated.
Wow.
Yeah, it's kind of interesting that back in those days that, you know, somebody at school could determine what your career was going to be. Unlike now, you make that decision. Even if people don't think, you know, you're capable of it, you go out there and prove them wrong.
Exactly. Well, I wish she had been alive, Miss Lloyd, when I eventually, because I ended up being a director of operations for a telecommunications company in
wow.
my last job in industry, before I decided I'd had enough of corporate life. So, yes, I would hope that I might have just said to her, I've told you so.
Well, I hope you had an assistant while you were doing that.
Oh, yeah, yeah. But yes, I think you're right. You make your way in life, and if you decide you want to do something, you go ahead and do it.
There you go. So, Beam, you want to run a commercial?
Sure.
And we want to remind our listeners, we're still live on Twitter. Get out there and hashtag Fresh Ink Group and let us know what your thoughts are. We will respond.
Yeah.
Lucifer loses his day job, so he starts his own gig. A little girl's tantrum destroys her toys. But will they lash out in revenge? Can a miserable housewife find a new life for herself in a tear-stained old painting? Eerie charms of the short story, fantasy, mystery, and horror includes a snake deciding the fate of the world, a slot machine choosing life's winners and losers, a malevolent fairy dancing men to their deaths, a couple desperate to escape a train station, the dog show judge facing death, and more great tales. Proudly published by Fresh Ink Group, Eerie Charms is available worldwide in jacketed hardcover, softcover, and all ebook formats. Patricia A. Guthrie offers a cauldron of eerie delights that will please, delight, and yet terrify you.
Yes, get out there and grab that. If you like highly imaginative short stories, Patricia A. Guthrie has you covered on this one. This is an excellent, excellent book, a fun read, and a little bit of spookiness involved in it. So,
a little bit.
Sounds very good.
So, Sally, you want to tell us about your family?
Yes. Well, my mother and father have passed away. I have two sisters and a brother who live in the UK. And then we have my husband's family here in Ireland, which are his brothers and a sister and a lot of nieces and nephews and their children. So we are great aunts and great uncles. And it's a family that on my side obviously traveled to. So they finally settled in the south coast of England, and I get to see them when I can. But of course, for the last 2 years, we were not allowed to travel from Ireland to the UK, and I hope to see them for the first time in 3 years in September.
Oh, that'll be nice.
Wow, yeah.
Yes. Yeah. It has been difficult, I know, for everybody. It's been a time of a lot of families who, particularly, I know in the States too, people move states, they live and work and go to college, so it must have been very, very difficult for everybody there, too.
Yeah.
Yeah. Definitely. Oh, yeah. Now, Sally, when you're not writing, just kind of sitting around and contemplating your next stories, Do you have any hobbies or interests? How do you spend your free time, if you have free time?
Well, to be honest with you, I don't really have very much free time because running the blog and doing the promotions and things like that takes up quite a bit of time, even though I do quite a bit of scheduling ahead. And writing takes up some of the time, but also I do not much because I can't call myself a good housewife, I have to say. I don't do much dusting and things like that. I had a lot of hobbies in the past when we traveled. I used to do tapestries. I've got several very large tapestries around the place. I did that when I gave up smoking 25 years ago to keep my hands busy. These days, to be honest with you, if I'm not shopping or walking, I'm online. The blog keeps me busy and social media keeps me busy. And that's what has affected what I write these days. I have two full-length books, and I have some health books which are full-length. But latterly, in the last few years, I have moved over to short stories and poetry because I find that for me now, I don't have the dream anymore of having the bestseller and making it into a movie, although I've got one book which I would like that for. I love writing, and I love the instant feedback, so I share an awful lot of my writing on the blog. I certainly serialized all my books, but I have time to write short stories. I love doing that in sort of 2,000 to 2,500 words. I find that's where my lane is, if you like, now. So, no, there's not a great deal of time, and I love it. For me, I started work at 14 when I was at school, after school, weekends, holidays, and I haven't stopped since. And I don't feel, because I'm nearly 70, that should change. I love what I do, and I love the interaction I have online with people who are now friends, collaborators, contributors to the blog. I mean, it's wonderful. Who'd have thought, even 15 years ago, that I could be talking to somebody in India, I could be talking to somebody in Canada, and end the day with somebody who is starting their life at morning in Australia. I mean, it's amazing. I sometimes think we don't really appreciate what we actually have, especially for my age group, because I know my mother and her friends, they didn't have this. And almost when they sort of retired, that was it. And they didn't interact, they weren't stimulated, they didn't see outside people anymore. We're so lucky.
Oh, very much.
So, indeed. I mean, we have the world at our fingertips. And this is a great time to be a writer or a musician, to where you can bypass the big, you know, publishing companies or the big record label. You can bypass that and take your product right to the people. And you can communicate with these people.
Yeah. Look at you with your YouTube channel where you're showing your trailers and where you could sell your books. I mean, when I first started out, it was only in print. I had to do press releases. I had to send the book out. I had to work so hard just to get local attention. And it's marvelous today that you could put something up on Amazon. I know that they have a monopoly, but how fabulous that you can put an ebook up that can be downloaded immediately by somebody thousands and thousands of miles away.
Yeah.
And even print, if they're printing locally, I mean, Amazon doesn't print in all the countries that it represents, but certainly to be able to order a print book and have it delivered
in the
country.
And I've mentioned this before on here. I don't get a whole lot of fan letters. One of the first fan emails that I got that came through Fresh Ink Group and our late office manager, she forwarded it to me, actually came from Ireland. And this is like 10 years ago, 9 years ago. And it
Fantastic.
Was this Irish teenage girl who had bought Jazz Baby and read it and sent me an email and was just like, I was just like floored. There's somebody in Ireland reading my book.
Well, it's a great book, and I'm not surprised
you
did that. But it is.
I still get a kick out of
it. Wonderful. Yeah.
Yeah.
But we couldn't have done that 10, 15 years ago. I mean, it costs €10 now to send a book from here.
Wow.
So for people trying to buy a book not through Amazon, through their POD, means that they have to pay 10 euros on top of the book to send it, to buy it. And that is a killer for particularly Irish authors, and particularly as Amazon has a very strange algorithm for Irish authors, and it's very difficult for us to put our print books up on Amazon if it's not POD, because they say we have to VAT register, which is sales tax, obviously, but
yeah.
Books here are not VAT'd, and we don't have to register for VAT, but Amazon says we do. So it means that we actually buy books, print books, from Germany.
Hmm.
Our books can be bought from the German Amazon site because it's part of the European Union. But because the UK, of course, is now out of the European Union, and our books are sold on Amazon UK, we have a problem. So it is, from postage to that sort of problem, means that having access to print on demand from Amazon and then printing in country for our buyers makes a huge, huge difference.
Now, is that using Amazon's own print on demand system, or are you going
yes.
through a third party? Okay, it's Amazon.
No, we have been publishers ourselves since 2004, and
right.
we've always published, printed my books and tried to and sold them on Amazon up until the last 2 or 3 years. But we have one. My last book was done as a POD with Amazon,
okay.
Which. We've decided we'll have to do that now for any more that I do, because it's the only way to do it that's cost effective for them and for us.
Now, we started out doing a kind of a network of print-on-demand companies starting in the U.S. and then working with a couple of other companies in other countries. And then eventually we got
yes.
to where we consolidated everything through Ingram's international printing and distribution
yeah.
channels. And Ingram, they own a plant just outside of London. It's a big print-on-demand
right.
plant right there. And
yeah.
then they've got one in Germany as well. So we've managed to get the cost down for print books
That's
in that
great.
Whole part of Europe.
Yeah.
You might want to consider looking into that. Since you're the publisher, you can always add a second distribution channel. Or
there's also individual
companies around London too.
Yeah. We actually work with a very good printer in Poland We did some hardbacks for my last poetry book, and we work with David's built up quite a good rapport with a number of printers, and we have access for distribution in the UK. But you've got to think outside the box these days, and you've obviously done that for you so that you can take on authors in the UK and in Europe.
Yeah,
I mean, David is more or less retired now, so we don't take on any new authors at the moment. And also, he's too busy decorating, to be honest. I keep an eye on him for that. But it's very difficult for self-published authors with print copies in a lot of countries. You've obviously got a great offering now.
Yeah, it takes some time to do that. You know, we were talking earlier about, you know, the technology and how the world is shrinking and, you know, how you can try to service your readers all around the world. That's a wonderful problem to have, trying to figure out the most inexpensive way to get a print book to somebody who's halfway around the planet from you. Another thing that we've noticed, and we've talked about this on the show before, too, is that that's a two-way street. Now you have that technological and that shrunken world and communications access to try to reach out through unlimited channels to find your readers, but readers are getting to where they expect to reach out and find their authors as well, to
yeah.
interact with
yeah.
them through social media, to be able to send a note and just say something about what your book meant to me, or ask a question. Why did you do this in this book or something like that? Are you finding that too, that you're having more interaction with your authors as time goes by? I mean, with your readers?
Yeah, I mean, absolutely, which is why I started the blog. And that's 11 years ago. I started it, first of all, to promote my own books and to offer that facility to readers. And then I started Facebook, and then I went on to Twitter. And I have worked with authors for a long time now, and it is amazing to me how many of them are still so resistant to being on social media And I said, well, don't you want to sell books? You know, they're not going to come through your door. You have to actually go out and get readers. You can't expect them to say, oh, yes, I think my Margaret Smith has written a book. They won't know unless you tell them. These days, there are something like 20,000 titles of one kind or another going up on Amazon every week.
Yeah.
And you just can't get your head above the parapet unless you're out there being very active on social media, whether it's a blog, which I think is very important, but certainly Twitter, social media. I don't use Instagram personally, but for many that works. But I still am astonished that people say to me, oh, I don't have any social media.
Wow.
But
yeah,
books.
Yeah, that's been saying. In fact, we've got one author that's namely my uncle. He's a former pastor, a retired pastor, and he wrote a couple of books, but he refuses to get on social media. So if it wasn't for, you know, those of us at Fresh Ink Group, you know, doing his social media for him, nobody would know he has any books out there. And I keep telling him that. But he's of the mind that people will just find his book. It's like, have you been on Amazon? There are billions of titles out there.
Yeah, it's a modern equivalent of refusing your local bookstore's request to come to a signing. Why would you not want to be out there meeting your potential readers?
Yep.
I think it's a fear. It is fear in some respects. And people are quite private, especially older people. I mean, my father-in-law wrote his first book at 80, and he wrote three. But he went up to book signings, but he found the whole social media thing completely and utterly, I would say, science fiction. And I think there is still an older generation who sees it as science fiction and probably quite evil. And I think the trouble is the media plays up the bad side of the internet.
Yeah.
They tend to belabor that point, usually with celebrities who ask sometimes for everything they get. But for those of us who don't have quite that status, it is an amazing thing. And I can't imagine how I would hardly have sold any books at all if I hadn't been on social media, partly because one has to recognize that those within your own writing community are your audience and likely to be your readers. So developing a following of like-minded people over a period of time, and it doesn't happen overnight. It takes years to build up a wonderful group of writing like-minded people, but they're your audience. I know if I look through the reviews, they're people I know, and I ask them, please be honest, because I know people say, oh, well, you know them and you promote them more, you know, you talk to them on Twitter or something. But in actual fact, people are honest, but they are my audience. They're my readers. And if I didn't do what I do, I wouldn't sell any books.
Yep. And it's a long-term process, too. You have to stay engaged with them over time.
Yeah.
Keep in their awareness. Make sure they know that you're working on a new book and anticipate what's coming next.
And to be honest with you, I would have sat up until 1 a.m. to do this if you hadn't kindly changed the timing. Because the other thing that I firmly believe in is meeting your future readers.
Yeah.
And Voice of Indie is doing exactly that. You're introducing authors to a much broader audience, and perhaps people who might not think, oh, well, she's English, she writes fairy stories, she probably isn't very interesting. Well, I hope after meeting me they might think slightly differently. But I think it's very important for people. And of course, you two, Stephen and Beam, are used to talking on radio. I'm used to doing it because I did it for 10 years. And so I love being behind the mic. And I already recognize that this is a way to reach people. But people are very frightened of it. People say, oh, I can't possibly do a podcast. I can't possibly go on radio. But it's a wonderful medium, and I think you're doing a fabulous job.
Well,
yeah,
you
know, and we've had, we invite authors to be on the show. And we've had a couple say, well, I'm not comfortable with that. And, you know, it's a shame because these are excellent writers. And they're put off by, you know, I guess being on live. Because when we're on live, we open the phone lines. So we have callers call in and we take questions and comments on Twitter, and we read them on the air, and there's an interaction there. And the really cool thing about these podcasts is they archive them, and they're forever in the archives, and people can find them. You can continue to share the links to these, in perpetuity out on social media, and people can always listen to a 5 or 6 year old episode from way back, and they can hear it.
Well,
and,
you've done a great job with the pre interview publications, and I've in fact put your promo poster up on my pinned tweet.
All right.
And in fact, I probably have had at least 25 retweets today. And
ooh,
I estimated that apart from my followers, it's probably gone out to probably another 100,000.
All right.
Now, not all of those are going to listen, but it's getting it out there in front of people. And people, for example, don't use a pinned tweet. And one girl said to me, I don't believe in a pinned tweet. It should be a fresh tweet. You should just have a fresh tweet in that position. And I said, well, okay, but you want something for people to retweet. And when they come into your profile, it's an opportunity to expand on the 280 characters you've already got to share your books and other things about you. And it's so important to have that pinned tweet so that when they come in and see your profile for the first time, they automatically click on that retweet. And it can go out to hundreds of thousands of people over a period of weeks. And the other thing people don't do is change it. There are people who've got a pinned tweet there that's been there since 2017.
Yeah.
And of course, you can only retweet it once. So if you keep going into people's Twitter accounts, you've got to find something that you can share about them, which is important. So, I hope that has helped. So, and of course, when this goes out and airs on Wednesday, I shall make sure that I retweet it and pin it, and also I will put it on my menu on my blog.
All right.
So that when everybody comes in, they'll see Voice of Indie interview.
Now, see, this kind of stuff is what gets a guest invited back, too.
Well, I haven't blotted my copy already.
Now, the Voice of Indy tweet for this episode that's pinned right now, that'll be actually changed before Wednesday with the new link, because I got to upload this once the show's done.
That's fine.
Uploaded for the Wednesday show, but I will immediately pin a new tweet for that as well. So this is, saving that pinned spot. You're correct. It's important because that's the first thing they're going to see when they come over there. And what I do after every Wednesday show ends, I go over there and pin the next week's show. So it's out there, and for a full week, that pinned tweet it's got a link to it. So hopefully.
Well, a lot of people have said we're really looking forward to listening. We're looking forward to hearing. So doing that pre-interview publicity is very important. So they're expecting it. So then when I put the real link up, hopefully they'll all be in. And I will also make sure that I go into your Twitter and interact on Twitter with anybody who's got any questions. Since I've been so inconvenient.
You haven't. Just do hashtag Fresh Ink Group, and then at the top, you hit the latest, anybody that's out there that's interacting with it on Wednesday, you'll be in, after Wednesday as well.
Right.
You'll be able to.
Now, Beam, you want to bang out a couple of commercials here?
Sure.
Maybe two in a row real quick. And all your listeners out there, if you're Sally Cronin fans scattered all around the world, we've got a good distribution network. You can find these books wherever you are.
With good jobs so hard to find, especially in rapidly expanding Florida, owning your own food truck could be the best option. It's the least expensive startup, and you can be fully operational in mere months. The rules and regulations can be a bit complex, and no single source has offered all the answers. Until now. How to Start and Run Your Own Food Truck Business in Florida by food truck veteran A.K. Wingler is the step-by-step guide that takes you from good idea to great success. Sure, it's hard work, but exciting, mobile, flexible, and highly profitable. And you get to be your own boss and set your own hours. Proudly published by Fresh Ink Group, this book tells you how and where to make money in this exploding independent industry. Grab your copy in laminated hardcover, glossy softcover, or any of the major ebook formats at retailers worldwide. Even if you're just curious for now, this guide is the best way to discover if a food truck business is right for you.
Now, from science fiction master Robert G. Williscroft, the Oort Federation, to the stars, the second Oort Chronicle. As the Oort Federation becomes a major force in the solar system, Braxton Thorpe passes the Federation chairmanship to former U.S. President John Butler. Thorpe's group offers humanity virtual immortality, but Isidor Orlov and his Udakhni Enterprises oppose their every move. While Thorpe's group terraforms Mars for more living space, the Mars Reds prove formidable as resistors. If the Asterian starship fighter pilots are released, will they align with Phoenix or Udakhni? And who will develop the right FTL technology? In this tense space adventure, Thorpe, his team, and Max the Tabby Cat travel to Proxima Centauri and beyond to the Aster system, 84 light-years distant. Will Thorpe bring together humans and Asterians in their quest for intergalactic travel? Will long life prove more than mere humans can handle? Grab Icicle, A Tensor Matrix, the first Oort Chronicle, and continue the journey with the Oort Federation to the stars. Proudly published in all print, digital, and sensory-enhanced audiobooks by Fresh Ink Group.
I've got two quick comments about those books. The food truck book, one of my closest lifelong friends is a Culinary Institute trained chef. He lives in Kentucky. And for a while, he ran a food truck in Florida. And I just sent him a copy of this book this last week. And he called me last night. He said, this book is fantastic. He said, it's great. It's quick. It's simple. It's not heavy, ponderous, long explanations or whatever. It's just quick, to the point, tells you what you need to know, gives you a layout, all that kind of stuff. He said, I highly recommend this. So that's a good endorsement right there. And the Oort Federation, To the Stars, the second Oort Chronicle by Robert G. Williscroft. I mentioned earlier, we're producing the audiobook for that. Beam, how many times have I interrupted us doing that and just commented, wow, this guy's really good. He knows his science fiction. You know, I've said that at least a half a dozen times because I haven't read this book until I'm actually reading it while we're doing the audiobook because I'm reading a couple of scenes ahead and marking where sound effects go, and he's dropping them in and then playing them back, and we're just kind of doing a collaborative kind of thing. So it's all a surprise to me while we're actually doing the audiobook, and I'm thoroughly enjoying this one. This series is really taking off. This has got some potential to be a landmark series in the science fiction genre. So good work, Robert G. Williscroft. And if you haven't checked his work out, people, get out there and find it.
Yeah, I'm not a huge science fiction guy. I never have been. But doing these audiobooks and reading along as we're putting them together, these are some enthralling stories. They're fantastic. He's a good writer, excellent writer.
Yep.
So now, listeners, we are on with author Sally Cronin. She is joining us from Ireland. Now, since it's not live, but if you do have questions or comments for Sally, tweet them as you're listening to this and using the hashtag Fresh Ink Group, and Sally will go back and answer your questions if you have them or respond to your comments. So keep that in mind. Hashtag Fresh Ink Group.
Yeah. Now, I'm eager to talk about some of Sally's books here. In fact, I'm looking at what I think is a fantastic title. I believe this is your first published book, Forget the Viagra, Pass Me a Carrot.
No, actually, it was a little bit later on, and it was the time when Pfizer lost the patent, or the patent ran out, and so it became more available online, the little blue pill, and I've done some research on the effects of taking Viagra, and I'm not sure in retrospect that it was probably the right title, because I got banned from quite a few places because of it.
Wow.
But it actually, when I said forget the Viagra, pass me a carrot, it, in fact, carrots do play an important part in this particular issue. So, yes, I have sold copies, but understandably, some people are reluctant to review them, but they have told me personally that they found it useful.
Hmm.
And that was about 2008 or 9 that I actually wrote that, so it was a little bit further along. Especially, I retrained as a nutritional therapist when I was losing my own weight, and I found it fascinating, and I still do. And it's a very important obsession of mine, is healthy eating. And I'm not a fad eater. I don't believe in dropping various groups, food groups. We've evolved over hundreds of thousands of years eating them, and to suddenly drop them is crazy.
Yeah, I agree.
But so very important for me, from, and that's why there's a very strong health element on the blog. It's important to me that people are not preached at, but understand the wonderful options that are out there for food.
Hmm. Now, in 2014, you published two books within 2 weeks of each other, Just an Odd Job Girl and Flights of Fancy. Can you tell us about those?
Well, that's because they had been in print. And, of course, the option to do an e-book came up, and we moved all of the ones that had been in print into e-book. Flights of Fancy is short stories and mixed genres, from paranormal to love, romance. There's one which is slightly science fiction, which is about Albert, who becomes the perfect test subject because of his eating habits. And Just an Odd Job Girl, is based on my fairly eclectic career history from the time I left college till I was about 28, which was quite varied. And so I turned it into a romance come humorous book called Just an Odd Job Girl. It's about a 50-year-old whose husband has traded her in for a fast tracker. By fast tracker, I mean a 20-something who doesn't want to train her own husband. She wants one already trained, and has got the nice house and the money. And Imogen is left. She's feeling rather frumpy and neglected. And then she pulls herself together and says, well, hang on a minute. I need to go out to work, even if it's my insanity. So she goes to a job agency, and the guy there is a really nice guy, and he said, look, just tell me about the odd jobs you had then, so we can establish where we might find a new job for you. And so the book actually relays, she says, all right, well, I'll have to think about that. And then she tells him all about these odd jobs, and they are from working as a dental nurse, working in a shoe department, a cosmetic department, feeding 140 school children three times a day, which I did when I was in my 20s. So all these jobs, the odd job girl, plus it's there's romance in there, and hopefully most people think it's very funny. And recently I've been sharing it as a serialization on my blog, and people say, I wish you'd make this into a movie, Sally. Make it into a movie. So, yeah, it's one of the books which is close to my heart because it's based on my own experiences.
Yeah, that sounds cool. You've got a pair of books, too, Tales from the Garden and then Tales from the Irish Garden. Tales from the Irish Garden is illustrated. What's tell us about those.
Well, that was the follow-on. When we arrived here and the rain started after 17 years of sunshine, I thought, well, I need something to cheer myself up. We had bought two or three of the smaller statues back with us. And I thought, hang on a minute, I'll go and get Queen Filigree, who I'd left under the magnolia tree in Spain, and I will bring her across to Ireland, because the people who bought our house were doing massive renovations. So they're going to be disrupted anyway. So I brought her over and then created other characters here, particularly Irish characters. And it's the journey here, living under the magnolia tree in our garden, and all the various adventures they have. So it's fairy stories from people 5 to 95. There is Children will get it, but they won't necessarily get some of the innuendos. The older people get that. Another book which is close to my heart because it's fun and it's, you know, it's not serious. There's so much dark stuff in the world today. Whilst I enjoy dystopian novels, there are times when I need to have a little frippery, if you like.
And your illustrator for Tales from the Irish Garden was Donata. Donata Zawadzka?
Yes. Yes, she was a Polish girl, and she was recommended to me, and she was amazing. What I did was I had some cards, gift cards, and there were characters that I wanted to capture. So she very kindly drew those, and I used them for the illustrations. So it was wonderful, and she was so accommodating, very reasonable, and a wonderful artist.
All right. Now, one that I here recently downloaded, and I'm going to get to it, it's on my to-be read list, and I may have to bump it up there, is Sam, A Shaggy Dog Story.
Yeah.
What's this one about?
Pretty cool.
Well, I love dogs, so that's why I grabbed that one.
Love the picture on the cover, too.
That's him. That's him going,
that's
you
Sam?
Want me to do what? Yeah, that's Sam. You want
that's
me to do what?
That's exactly what I was seeing.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, what?
Because we traveled around so much, we never had a dog. And I love dogs. I've had two rough collies before. And when we moved to Ireland the first time back for my husband's job, we had a house on 2 acres. And I said, look, I had a business, but I had somebody managing the shop side of it. I was seeing clients. I could be at home for a puppy. So I found... this guy had got a litter of puppies, and I said, right, that's it, I'm getting a Sam. Well, he was always going to be Sam, and I met him when he was 3 weeks old, and I picked him up, and he nestled in, and that was it, love at first sight. At 8 weeks, we brought him home, and he was a character from day one. The breeder gave me a bag of dry dog food for him. It said, that's his food. I bought it, and I put it in a dish, and he looked at me, and he went, you what? I don't eat that. And he wouldn't eat. So after hours, I put some fresh chicken I cooked and a bit of basmati rice and a bit of juice, and I put it in a dish. And I know that the puppies used to eat under a plank to keep the rain out of their food. So I put it in the fireplace, which wasn't lit, obviously, at the time. And he went in there, ate the lot, came out with soot all over his face. And we just, that was it. I said, I'll eat that. Thank you. Fresh chicken, basmati rice. And he was just a character. We had a feral cat who's in the book as well, called Henry, that I found had come under a bush to pass away peacefully. But I forced food into him, and he lasted another 3 years. But he adopted Sam when he was 8 weeks old. And I lost the puppy, got out one day into the garden, couldn't find him. And when I did go around the corner, there's this mangy cat nose to nose with the puppy, and they were best friends from that moment on. So 5 years later, David had been given a job in Madrid, and I packed the dog in the car, sold the business, and drove the 2,000 kilometers down to Madrid with the dog in the car. And then, he loved it. If you open the back door of the car, he was always in it. And he was just an amazing friend. I know everybody says their dogs are the best and the cleverest, but he really was an amazing, funny dog. So I wrote in, that was a tribute to Sam, A Shaggy Dog.
Okay. I'm looking forward to reading that.
I hope you enjoy it, Beam. It's important. And still, he's been gone a while, but even though we're here now, I found something down the back of the sofa the other day that he'd put there. And that has to be 16 years ago.
Wow.
Yeah, dogs and cats alike are just so full of personality. It's just, I mean...
Oh, they are. Have you two guys got dogs and cats?
I grew up with dogs and cats, but I don't have any currently. My whole life. And horses and chickens. I mean, I've had...
Oh, wonderful.
Goats and all kinds of animals, but at this moment, I don't. Now, book that you wrote... back in, I believe, 2013, Size Matters. This is about weight loss, and was this brought on by health issues or
Yeah. In fact, again, this is the e-book that came out then. This is my first book that I wrote, which was in, came out in 2001. And it was actually with a Canadian company, was one of the first self-publishers, which was Trafford Publishing. And then we got it back in 2004 and published ourselves. But I weighed 330 pounds when I was 42 and had relevant health issues. I was working in the job in the telecoms industry, and I loved my job, but it was stressful. And I, whilst I could manage everything in my job, I couldn't stop myself eating a Mars bar a couple of times a day or overeating. So I got to 330 pounds, and my husband was then moved to Belgium. I couldn't work. So I thought, right, well, this is the perfect opportunity. So I gave up my job and I said, I now have to get, the job is now me. And if I don't do something, the doctor said I wouldn't make 45.
Wow.
So I lost 150 pounds in 18 months.
Wow.
And I kept a journal. I studied medicine and I studied nutrition at the same time, focusing on the nutrition. And I did my diploma. I lost the 150 pounds and I published the journal about how I had got to the weight I'd got to, all the reasons. I look at it from a physical, emotional and mental approach to why I had got that weight. And then I also designed a special program to lose the weight, and that's at the back of the book. So it's a combination, my journal of how I lost it, why I was that weight, and then a program to lose the weight.
Oh, excellent.
Yeah.
So I hope I then worked with clients for about 10 years. In Ireland, I have my own diet advisory center. And then when I was living in the UK, I worked with clients as well. And particularly people who had morbid obesity, so were more than 10 stone overweight, because that's a really tough thing to come back from.
Mm.
And yeah. I hope... Well, I know that there are some people who still keep in touch, who kept the weight off, and that's another key issue. And it means that I look upon my own weight gain and my obesity as being something positive.
Oh,
because
yeah.
It enabled me to then help others.
Yeah, I mean, you should be very proud, obviously. You're pushing 70 now and probably have at least 30 more years in you, and, you know, you've accomplished something great. But you're still helping other people do the same thing, and that's terrific. That's absolutely terrific. Helping one other person, you can save a life doing that, and I can't imagine how good that can make you feel.
So that's it. You know, I think one of the things you've just said, I'm pushing 70, but these days, as they say, really, 70 is the new 40.
There you go.
Exactly. Yeah.
And if I don't wear my glasses when I look in the mirror, I can almost believe that.
All right.
Now, life is like a mosaic. What's this one about?
Random fragments and harmony.
Yeah, that's mainly short stories. All the rest of my books now have been short stories interspaced with some syllabic poetry, which I was introduced to a couple of years ago by somebody called Colleen Chesbrough, who is a lovely poet in her own right, but she runs a challenge and a very informative blog which helps people with that particular format of poetry. So short stories and poetry is probably where I'm going to be now. I think that's probably my lane, and I'm very happy to do that because I love the instant feedback that you get from sharing a short story.
Yes. I'm a big fan of short stories. They're some of my favorite to write and to read. And, you know, I've got two short story collections, but I'm actually starting to, you know, piece together a possible third. That's going to be down the road, but I love short stories.
Yes. I think it's a wonderful format to start, middle, and end. I find that I'm reading more of them now, too. Because it's not because my attention span has shrunk. It's more that I love the pace And the fact that I can dip into a book while I've got 10 minutes or 15 minutes free and read something that takes me out of my current state. So if I'm feeling a bit down or I'm frustrated or I'm really tired of my own writing, if I read somebody else's short story, I think, okay, right, now I feel better.
Short stories offer instant gratification.
Yeah.
Yes.
And listeners, Sally Cronin has a wonderful selection of short stories. I'm looking at a number of books here. What's in a Name? Colorful Tales, and then What's in a Name? Stories of Life and Romance. Life is Like a Bowl of Cherries. Sometimes Bitter, Sometimes Sweet. Short Stories and a Sprinkling of Poetry. And I imagine if I click to the next page, I'd find even more here. But it's great to have such a good selection of short stories. It's a great way for people to sample your work and try different kinds of writing that you do as well, all in one cover.
Yeah, I and also it's not something I have to sit down every morning at 6:30 and say, well, I've got to write a chapter today. I find that I actually write my short stories and my poems over a year, so I don't feel the pressure. I think that's the other beauty of being self-published and an indie author is you haven't got an agent and you haven't got a publisher. Well, when are you going to get that to us?
Yeah. Now, I'm looking at a book here that's, I'm assuming, is very, very practical, Media Training, the manual.
Yes, that's probably slightly out of date now because I wrote that well before social media was so important. But I have updated it on the blog as Media Training and also PR for authors. So I did that as a series, and I also have it as PDFs.
Okay.
It's important, again, what we were going back to right at the beginning was about social media and a blog and interacting with your readers and reaching out rather than expecting them to come in. It's about saying you've written, you've spent all this time writing a book, you've gone through all the process, editing, proofreading, and then getting it formatted and up on Amazon, and then you abandon it. Don't abandon it. And that's what a lot of authors do.
Yeah.
They sit it up there and they say, well, I've published a book. Yep, that's the great start. Now the work starts.
Oh, yeah.
That's what I tell people. The writing the book is the easy part. It's getting out there and doing the legwork to let everybody know you have a book. That's the hard part. That's where you really got to roll up your sleeves and get down in the muck. Now, before we wrap up this conversation here, I would like to talk about your blog. You've mentioned it. I love your blog. I subscribe to it. Smorgasbord. It's a wonderful place you review other people's work, and it's a wonderful place if you're a reader and you're looking for a good book to read. That's the place to go visit. Read what Sally has to say about it.
Well, that's very kind. The book shelf now is books that I recommend. So your book, for example, is on the bookshelf. It was a free-for-all before, but now I feel that if I say I recommend a book, I hope that might add a little bit extra. So the bookshelf now only has my recommended reviewed books in it, which is still, I think, there's about 80 from the last couple of years. But I am very happy to do new book promotion. It's a certain format, but I'm very happy for any author who's got a new book out, provided they have some social media of some sort. I'm very happy to promote their new books. I don't accept books for review usually. I do if I have read the author before, because I've got about 50 books waiting to be read and reviewed. But I am very happy to promote an author, especially with their new book. Delighted to do that.
Just 50, that's all?
Just 50.
My Kindle is packed, and it's right up there. It's about 50 now as well.
Yeah.
I know. But there's so much to look forward to.
Yeah.
So, Sally, do you have some advice to all of our authors out there in the audience?
Basically, what we've been talking about, both you and Beam and myself, is, you've done all this hard work. then you've got to take steps to make sure that that book is seen. So get involved in the writing community. Do have at least one social media. Do start a blog. Not all about you. I think that's a turnoff. I think if it's all about you, then unfortunately people go, oh, well, you know, let's have something else. But bring other people in, other writers in, so that you're creating a watering hole, if you like, where people can come in, talk about books, discuss things. And it doesn't have to all be about books. You have other interests. Why not share them? So yeah. I do think a blog and at least one social media, and reach out and join groups on Facebook or Twitter that are specifically for authors and writers, because then you're going to meet like-minded people and possible readers.
Good advice.
Yeah. And speaking of social media, where can listeners find you on social media?
Well, I think the best place is probably Twitter. The blog is smorgasbordinvitation.wordpress.com. And my Twitter, which is probably the easiest place, is just SGC58. I kept it simple, SGC58, Sally Georgina Cronin.
All right.
And you're also on Goodreads. And how do people find you on SoundCloud?
SoundCloud, Sally Cronin.
Just Sally Cronin. Boy, you made it difficult, yeah. Didn't you? It's been a hoot having you on, Sally. It's on this Wednesday evening in the United States, this Monday, whatever it is, in Ireland. We appreciate you coming on.
Well, I'm really grateful for the invitation. Thank you so much, and I hope I haven't over-talked.
Oh,
no.
But it's been lovely meeting you both.
This is a podcast. It's about talk. we want guests to talk.
Yeah.
Good.
And
yeah,
speaking of talking,
that.
Next
uh-huh.
week, on the 11th, we've got author A.G. Fletcher. And then the week after that, on the 18th.
On the 18th, we've got Betty A. Stevens. She's going to be on the show. And after that, on the 25th.
We've got novelist Jason Gwynn, whose work I'm not familiar with yet. I've got a couple of weeks to get familiar here. I'm looking forward to meeting him and learning about him. And what do we got happening in June?
We have a return visit on June 15th of Mary Schmidt. She's been on the show before, and she's going to come by and catch us up on what's going on in her life since she was last on. So you guys are going to want to tune in for that one. Mary's always a good conversation. And
yep.
Well, it sounds very exciting.
Yeah.
Yes, indeed.
Look forward to it.
Now, Sally, when we end the show here, we're not going to be able to talk off air like we did at the start of the show, before the show, because when I end the show, it kills the phone lines. But again, we want to say thank you so much for taking time out of your afternoon and joining us here on this program.
Yeah, it's been
my
pleasure.
Thank you very much, guys.
Okay, Bean, you want to play Ellie's commercial on their way to the closing?
Sure thing. Where's that
See
one?
See you, everybody.
See you, everybody.
Hey, young adults. I'm author Ellie Combs. Check out my first three novels in my mythology series, where Greek goddesses help us teens resolve problems from bullying to relationships. Now in print, digital, or audiobooks, with music and sound effects. Book one is Daisy Bold and Beautiful.
After a moment or two of silence, laughter filled the room, and students quickly began comparing notes on who had read the directions and who had fallen for the trick. DJ shared a smile with Hudson, as they both belonged to the Figured It Out group.
Book two is Miley in the Mirror.
Sam shot a cocky grin in Miley's direction. She didn't want him getting the idea she was fangirling on him or anything, and run the risk of future game invitations.
Mad Max and Sweet Sarah is the new third book, so we're still producing the audiobook version. Go to freshinkgroup.com or your favorite retailer to learn more and order now.
You've been a part of Voice of Indie, a production of Fresh Ink Group. Spread the word, support our guests, then find us at freshinkgroup.com and be sure to hashtag Fresh Ink Group.